Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and wherever you're listening from, it's great to have you with us, whether you're a first-time listener or one of our old pals. And if you are new to the podcast, well, let me tell you, you're in for a treat, because today I'm joined by two fabulous writers and champions of children's literature. My first guest is a number one New York Times best-selling author who's published 12 books here in the UK and is currently US National Ambassador for Young People's Literature. In 2021, he was awarded the Carnegie Medal for his book Look Both Ways and was previously shortlisted in 2019 for his powerful verse novel Long Way Down. Here to tell us about not one, but two of his latest books, Stump Boy and Oxygen Mask, it's Jason Reynolds. Welcome to Book Off.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
It's great to see you again, Jason. And my second guest is an award-winning performance poet, playwright, author, and the newly appointed Waterstones Children's Laureate, ladies and gentlemen, the first black man to hold this role. He is twice the winner of the Independent Bookshop Week Picture Book Award, and in 2015 won the CLPE Clipper Poetry Award for his collection Werewolf Club Rules. Here to tell us about his new picture book, Our Tower, it's Joseph Coilo. Welcome to you, Joe.
Hello, so lovely to be here.
I'm a Joseph officially on my birth certificate, and also when I've been very naughty, but I go by Joe. I'm assuming you might be the same.
Yes, yeah, when I'm naughty, Joseph.
Sure. When you're in a professional situation or being naughty, it's Joseph. Yeah. And I should do the introductions here, even though I know you've both met. Jason, Joe, Jason.
We're good, man. We've done photo shoots together at this point. It's all good, man.
We are all in the UK at the moment, but we're being beamed in through various different parts of it. And it's great to have you both with us. And over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to talk about these brilliant new books of yours that I've mentioned already. We're going to find out what you've been reading and enjoying recently. And of course, we'll do the Book Off, where each of you gets to pitch us a book that you absolutely love that you think we should all read. That's for later, though. Jason, if I could come to you first, can we talk about Stump Boy, which I read last year and absolutely loved it. And I feel like we need superheroes more than ever right now. So perhaps you can just tell us about Portico Reeves, perhaps set up the story here for those that haven't got to this book yet.
Yeah, Stump Boy is a... I don't know what to call the book. I don't know if it's a graphic novel or a comic or... I'm not always sure. It's an experimentation of sorts. But the story itself is about a young man named Portico Reeves who lives in what we call an American apartment building, which I suppose is like a tower block, right? Is that
yep.
right? So he lives in a tower block, and he is your everyday boy who's rambunctious. He has friends. He runs around in the world of the apartment. But he's dealing with a moment of upheaval in his family because his parents are getting a divorce. And that divorce has triggered his anxiety in ways that nothing else has. And he takes on an alter ego, Stump Boy, which is basically just his version of a stunt man, except the stunts he's trying to do are his parents' stunts so that they don't hurt themselves. And that's the basic premise of Stump Boy in the meantime.
I just love it, Jason. And I feel like maybe this is just me, but I feel like people in general are talking a little bit more about anxiety at the moment. Perhaps since the pandemic, it's become something that's a little bit more okay to mention, to talk about. Is it something that you yourself have experienced and dealt with?
Of course, of course. I mean, I'm, you know, diagnosed with anxiety at 25. Right. And 25, man. And it's been quite a journey, but it hasn't been, you know, we like to harp on the doom and gloom of a thing. But for me, it's just been an interesting sort of way to think about the human experience and to think about the way that we process our lives every day. I don't feel any less than or any weaker or anything like that. I just feel like I live with something that has to be managed. And if manageable, it can be something that's pretty useful at times, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least we can think about it as a useful thing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I want to come on to talk about Oxygen Mask, which is your latest graphic novel. And I will in a moment. But Joe, if I could talk to you about this beautiful new book, Our Tower, which has parallels to Stump Boy in a way that it's about this tower block, you know, in the UK. And it follows three children living in their block. Perhaps you could introduce us to them and you could set up this beautiful story for us.
Yeah, so these three kids are in their block of flats, which was inspired greatly from the place I grew up, the Alton Estate in Roehampton, which was Europe's largest council estate. And at the start, they see their estate as very grey, boring and harsh, which is how I would often see my estate. I remember looking out from my third floor window and looking at the sunlight reflecting off the concrete and just thinking, ugh, I don't like the look of the harsh concrete. But Roehampton's a very green area. And what I loved was the height, because from the height I could see for miles. And I could look down on the trees that kind of bordered the road up to my block. And on one of those trees, I would see a face in the crown of this old man, this sort of old, grizzled man. And when I'd go out to play with my friends, it was the 80s, so, you know, we were allowed to play out at quite a young age. I would try and search for this tree, but from the ground level, I couldn't appreciate the crown, and so I could never quite find the tree. And so the book was inspired by the idea of what would happen if I had found that tree. So these three kids, they hear a song on the wind, and they leave their block of flats, and they creep out to the edges of the estate, and they search for this tree. But they get to find it. And when they find this tree, the trunk opens up for them and they tumble down into this magical world where they meet various magical creatures and a magical being that gives them a stone with a hole right through the middle. They are often known as hag stones. And using this stone, they're able to reevaluate their block and their estate, because the things they look at through that stone, the magical things become ordinary, but the ordinary things become magical, and they see the true nature of life, and it leads to them realizing the beauty and the sense of community that they have on their estate.
And hearing you talk about it, it really does, it brings the magic out of this book. It's beautiful. And part of the magic of this book, Joe, is the stunning illustrations here by Richard Johnson. This is a question for both of you, but I'll start with you, Joe. How do you find collaborating with artists for your books?
Well, I feel so lucky to have got to work with some brilliant illustrators. Often when when I first started out with picture books, the publishers would keep you separate, which I understand why. I think us writers can be quite precious and often have a vision for how we want our work to look. And so I think it's an act of protection on the publisher's part. But now I've been doing it a while, I get to work a bit more closely with the illustrators, and it was great to meet Richard virtually at the time, and we're talking about the story in the book, and I sent him some photos of my old estate and where I grew up. And he did some brilliant things, like he recorded the story and then went on long walks just listening to the story on repeat, so kind of seeking inspiration. And then when I first started to see the roughs coming in, I was literally able to recognize areas where I used to play out, some of the unusual structures. There were some weird structures at the bottom of my block, which I think was to do with the heating, which powered the whole block. And we'd play out around these big sort of concrete chimney things. But I would see those things, and it took me straight back to being a kid. And there were also three statues, a work of art by Lynn Chadwick, which were on the edge of my estate. And me and my friends were terrified of these statues. We called them the Three Witches and never went near them. And I sent Richard a picture of these, and he went and researched them further, and he's recreated his version of the statues within the book. So it feels like a very personal book because of that. And it's just wonderful seeing how Richard, in a filmic sense, kind of brought that story to life.
Yeah. Very much so. And it is, as I said, it is a beautiful book. Really, really striking pictures. And Jason, you collaborated for Oxygen Masks with Jason Griffin, right? Is that a friend of yours? You've known him for years?
Yeah, I've known him for 25 years. Right. Man. He's like one of my brothers. I've known that dude. We've lived together for a huge bulk of our adult lives. He's like my favorite person to work with. I mean, at first I have to say that I got to work with Raul III on Stunt Boy.
Yeah.
And who's just a master. You know, I checked out Joe's book and I saw the illustrations. And they're so saturated, and so rich. Really incredible. Just pulls you into this magical story. And I think for our story, because it isn't magical in the same way, it's all a bit cheeky, and like, because the art has to do what the art needs to do for the story, right? Every book is different, and so I look at sort of what Joe's book looks like, and I'm like, gosh, I wish I would have. This is amazing, but then I realized like Stunt Boy doesn't work the same if it's that kind of illustration, yeah. Raul has this really unique style. He's a Mexican American guy, and so his style is sort of drawn from, the old, Cuba Libre wrestlers and things of that nature. You know what I mean?
Like, you really get that, actually.
You really get that. It's really something special, and I love it. Love it so much. And then with Jason, on the other hand, he's a fine artist. The one thing that he would never want to be called is an illustrator. Not because he doesn't respect illustrators, he does, but because he would struggle to draw the same thing over and over again. Yeah. He's somebody that every single page to him is like, he doesn't really care what I'm doing. He's like, I'm going to make masterpieces. He's like that kind of artist that's totally like, I'm just going to do what I want to do type of thing. And it's good. I mean, I trust him. And this particular book, instead of it being an illustrated version, and instead of it being illustrations, it's responses. It's more like responses or interpolations. Or his own sort of expression of the narrative through his particular medium. And then we take those two things and we mesh them together to create this experience, which is really what we want that book to feel like.
Oh, and you absolutely achieve it, Jason, because I'm just literally looking through it now. And I remember, like, when it first got sent to me, I almost had to take each page and really sort of take it in, because, like you said, each page is like a sort of work of art on its own. Yeah. Every single page has a lot to take in, and then there's the words as well, your words on top of that. Mm-hmm. And not many words. And what I quite liked about it is that because you didn't put so many words on the page, you're really able to take both in. So absolutely. You are taking the story in, and you're taking Jason's art and interpretation of that in as well. But it also is a book that can be read again, I think, because
It should be read a few times. I'm excited to see what people, especially for like the young folks who read it at 14, what it's like for them to read it at 21, and what it's like for them to read it at 30. It may change a bit, even on the way that they remember 2020, and sort of the vivid nature of that year may shift as they continue to get older. We remember things differently as we grow, and that book would be an interesting anchor point for them.
Because when I was getting into reading, I remember I was about 10 or 11, and one of the first things I read probably were graphic novels. That was a big gateway into literature for me and into reading for pleasure. which of course this is. But this is, you know, a really important story, I think, as well, Jason. Perhaps you could set this one up for us. And also, it's told in three parts. Perhaps you can explain why and how you decided to tell it this way.
Yeah, it's the story of 2020, sort of, right? It's hard to talk about it because I don't know what to call it, but because I don't think it's a manifesto, though I've heard it described that way.
Okay.
But it's just a snapshot, really. It's a photograph, you know. It's a photograph of 2020, and it's meant to serve as sort of a way for us to catch our breath. I think 2020 was a year that was stripping air from us in every way. Stripping air from us and racial uprising, stripping air from us. COVID was attacking the respiratory system. Like everything sort of was taking air emotionally and mentally, physically, spiritually, creatively, socially, right? Just suffocating us. And this book was meant to sort of talk about where one might find the oxygen mask. And the answer, what I hope we all learned, was that the oxygen masks for us all exist in the mundane bits of our lives. You know, the boring bits is really where the magic is. You know, if your kids are crying, it means your kids are alive. What a beautiful thing that is now, right? We have perspective is an amazing thing. I always call it the sixth phase of grief. It's got to be perspective. You know, where you can kind of see things a little differently. And it's written in what I call breaths. It's three sentences, really. The book is written in three sentences that I remove the punctuation from and let Jason break up as he wants, which is why people think it's a poem, but it's not a poem.
Right.
It's three long sentences. And they're called breaths because there's that theory that if you take three deep breaths, you come back to some sense of equilibrium. And that's how the book is structured in three breaths.
Yeah. I love that. I love that thinking about it in that way. And also that we all, well, but a lot of us were really taking the breaths we needed after 2020. I'll tell you that. And during it, I think, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a stunning book. I really, really hope it finds loads of readers of all ages, Jason.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Joe, I got to talk about the Children's Laureate, because this is a new role for you. Have you settled in yet? And for those that don't know, perhaps you could tell us what it actually entails as well, because this is very exciting.
Yeah, so the Children's Laureate is a role that's been going for a while now. I'm the 12th Children's Laureate, following on from Cressida Cowell. It's a two-year post, following nominations sort of by the industry and by writers and illustrators and literature organisations and what have you. And each laureate makes the role their own, which is a lovely thing. So I'm focusing on three areas. I'm going to, one part is called Poetry Prompts, where I'll be creating regular content, inviting the nation to write poems in fun and accessible ways, because that's what I've spent the last 20 years of my life doing in the classroom. And I realize that poetry comes with a lot of baggage. So I want to break down those barriers and get people realizing that they are all poets. I also am going to spend a large part of my tenure highlighting up and coming writers and illustrators and poets and storytellers to help diversify bookshelves, because it took me a while to see myself as a writer. It wasn't until the wonderful late great Jean Binter Breeze visited my school and read a poem about the softest touch that I first had that moment of, that could be me. You know, there was someone who looked a bit like me doing the job of writing and performing. And I want to ensure that every child gets the opportunity to see themselves as a writer, as a storyteller, as a bookmaker. And last but not least, I'll be visiting libraries. I gave myself the challenge pre-COVID of joining a library in every library authority in the UK. I then discovered there are 209 library authorities.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So it took a while, but I managed to join 140 libraries, meeting librarians Amazing. On the way, getting a library card, borrowing books, highlighting those writers and illustrators. But then COVID hit. But now, as laureate, I get to join the remaining 70-odd, because we've thrown a few extra in for good luck. And I'm going to be sharing stories and poems and getting people into their libraries.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. I love that you're joining every single library. I've just moved, actually, and one of the first things I had on my to-do list was to go and join the local library and get in there and start getting some books out. and I want to talk, Jason, about your role as National Ambassador of Children's Literature in a moment. But just because you mentioned it, Joseph, I love watching you perform poetry. I love watching your videos and you know, seeing you live. And I wonder whether you'd noticed recently if poems are becoming more popular, you know, amongst young people specifically.
For sure. We see that just from the CLP Clipper Award, which has been having more and more nominations each year, more poetry books being published. When I first started out, I mean, it took me 12 years to get published. And then I managed to get published because I met a poetry editor, the wonderful Janetta Otter Barry, and she published my first book. But even then, with a book out, I still couldn't get an agent because people would say, oh, well, you write poetry and you've got a poetry book out. There's nothing more we can do for you. But that's changing now. There's far more poetry books coming out. A book I was reading recently by Alex Walton, Daydreams and Jelly Beans, which is a beautiful younger poetry collection. And Matt Goodfellow has some brilliant poetry collections coming out as well. So it's great to see like new voices coming up and more poetry collections out there. And I think poetry is hugely popular and shorter forms, which we see with Jason's Oxygen Mask. It's such a beautiful kind of, and I was saying to Jason the other day, like how theatrical it is and how it forces you to breathe and look again. And I think people are realizing the power in the units of language in the shorter form. Yeah, the fact that Jason's got these three beautiful sentences here, but they take you on this long narrative journey that we can all relate to because poetry shorter forms do that. They have this, they cut to the heart of things, which you can do in longer form, but yeah. I think there's something special about the shorter form which just cuts straight through.
Oh, completely agree. And much like when I was younger and reading graphic novels, I was also sort of delving into poetry collections and like learning some short poems as well that I could recite. And that was another really important way into reading, I think, for me, and to sort of learning language and stuff. And Jason, before we move on, I do want to ask about your role, the National Ambassador of Children's Literature, because I imagine there are some parallels with being the Children's Laureate here, are there?
Yeah, there are. I mean, the biggest difference is I can't really promote other authors.
Okay.
Which is tricky. Ours is governmental.
Right.
And so
right.
Because of that, you got to be careful about promotion and things of that nature. But, you know, so for us, it's more about the perpetuation and proliferation of reading and writing. Right. You're just the sort of the chief encourager. For reading and writing.
That's
and
quite a good title. Chief Encourager. Yeah, I like that.
You know, like my, and for me, I really wanted to take a different approach and figure out how, you know, how to come through the back door. I think that there's nothing wrong with tricking kids. You know, you got to trick them sometimes. I think.
So I think we'd all agree. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah, you just got to trick them, you know. So I never really talk too much about books, actually. I talk about story, and I talk about their relationship to story, to their own stories and the stories of their environments and families, and give them something to be, you know, try my best to help them find some pride in who they already are and allow them to see that the stories that exist within them are just as important as all those stories on the shelf, if not more important. And using that as a starting point, especially for the young people who don't like to read and write. So that's been my platform. My term is up though. Joe is just getting going, and I you know, Godspeed, Joe. My time has come to an end. I'm a few months out, man, before I'm going to take off my medallion.
Right. Okay. So the baton, it's almost like the baton's being passed, even though it's for different countries.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, I just love that you're both such huge champions of children's literature, and I really do. You know, we try and do it as much as we can on this podcast, and as a soon to be published children's author myself, you know, I think it's really important that we're talking about children's books and poetry and how to get people into reading of all ages. But these books that I've loved and enjoyed of yours recently are just some of the ones that should be put into many children's hands, I think, of all ages. I always like to ask my guests what they've been reading and enjoying recently, because you know how it goes. We read so much and we're very lucky in the publishing industry that we get sent these books sometimes by people we know and our friends that are authors and publishers. And we go, oh my goodness, that was so amazing, and not always get the chance to shout about it. So has there been anything that you, Joe, have read recently and enjoyed, and any authors that you want to sort of put on our radar?
Yeah, I was very lucky to meet Xavier Leopold at the Edinburgh Book Fair, and to pick up his latest book, Art for the Heart, which I have here, which is a fill-in art journal. And I just thought the approach to this was brilliant. It's, you know, loads of fantastic illustrations. Xavier's kind of burst onto the art scene. He started out as an artist in 2020. And so he's got this wonderful story of, like, anyone can do it, you know, and probably did what a lot of us didn't, of, you know, starting a hobby and then staying true to it and sticking with it. But this book is
keeping at it.
Yeah, exactly. But this book is brilliant because it's part art journal, but it's also part, like, mindfulness journal, encouraging kids to take time out and to have moments of reflection through art and showing the power of art in doing that. So I think it's a beautiful introduction to what art can do, how we can use art, how we are all artists, and how art can make us feel better. And I was like flicking through it on the train back from Edinburgh, and it's just like, it makes you want to get out a bunch of crayons or colouring pencils and just start colouring in his illustrations and drawing, you know, your favourite meal, your worst meal, yeah, yourself as a superhero, stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's a brilliant book.
Fantastic. That sounds ace. I'm definitely going to be checking that out. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Jason? Have you, I know you've been traveling, you're jet lagged, but have you found time to read and enjoy anything recently?
Man, you know, you should have gave me your book to promote, man. Congratulations, man. That's big. That's a big deal. And you slipped it in there so cavalierly, but we should take a second to, you know, the other Joe and I should take a second to congratulate you.
You're very kind. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let's see. It's a collection of poetry. Actually, I have it right here. It's called Mannerism. It's not out yet.
Okay.
So it's called Mannerism. Oh, and it's by this poet. His name is Yomi Sode. I don't want to, forgive me, brother, if you hear this and I've ruined your name, but it's called Mannerism, and it's a collection of poems. And I started reading it yesterday. I was in Birmingham, and I had some time to kill. And this is pretty beautiful. Mm. I mean, he is doing the thing. Like, you know, sometimes you read poetry and it's like, wow, mechanically everything is doing what it's supposed to do. And then other times you read poetry and it's all sort of gut and no mechanics. And then every now and then you read poetry that's like the perfect nexus between the science and the soul of it, right? And that's when you're like, oh, this is what we can do. Like, this is sort of an elevated how far we can go with it, right? If you have both, if you understand the craft and like the art of it and the heart of it, right? The craft of it and also sort of the creativity of it simultaneously. And he's doing all of those things. And it's just, when it's right, it's right, you know?
Yeah. The art and the heart. I love that. That's a great phrase. Mannerism.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, two fab recommendations there. Thank you both for those.
When do we get to the book off, bro? I got to talk about the other book.
Well, luckily it's time. It's time. Jason's chomping at the bit here to get onto the book off. This is where you each get 3 minutes to tell us about a book that you love, that you think we should all read. You get 3 minutes uninterrupted. You don't have to use the 3 minutes, but if you are still talking at the 3 minute mark, I'm either going to be ringing you out with the school bell or honking you out with the bicycle horn. So before we get started and get into it, Jason, I know you're desperate to do so. We just got to get a bit of admin out the way. Now, technically, we always say the person who's traveled the furthest gets to decide if they go first or second. I think, Jason, due to your jet lag and the fact that you're halfway up the country anyway, that you get to decide if you go first or second.
You know, because of my respect for Joe and his position as the laureate, I will actually go first so that he can
thank you.
So that he can really sort of land the plane.
I think. I love it.
I think that's respectful, you know.
Very respectful, Jason. Yeah. And Joe, you get to decide at the 3 minute mark then whether you are honked out by the bicycle horn or if you're rung out by the bell. Which would you prefer?
Bicycle horn.
Bicycle horn, obviously.
Yeah.
A great choice. So then, we are going to put 3 minutes on the clock here, Jason. Just tell us before we start it the book that you're putting forward, please.
It's called Me Moth by Amber McBride.
Which is only came out last year, I think, didn't it? It's quite new.
Just came out last year.
Yeah. Yep. Alrighty. 3 minutes on the clock, uninterrupted, to tell us about Me Moth. Over to you.
First of all, I don't need 3 minutes for this. I won't need 3 minutes because the book sells itself. This is a debut novel in verse written by a professor of poetry from the University of, I think, Virginia State University in America. And it chronicles, it's a dual narrative that chronicles the life of Moth, a young woman named Moth, who loses her family, basically her entire family, in an accident. And she meets a boy named Sonny, who is also searching for his family. And they go on this adventure in search of their lost loved ones. The brilliant thing about it, right, because it is sort of this road trip kind of story. It's like an adventure tale, sort of. But if you look it up online, people will call it a fantasy, right? And what's interesting about these sort of like the monikers that we use to try to classify stories is that you can only strap a title to a story based on what you know or don't know, right? So the reason that it's called fantasy is not because there's any fantasy in the story, but because Amber is using traditional like spiritual systems of like the indigenous people, because Sonny is an indigenous kid, right? And so one character is black, one character is indigenous, and so they have all the ancestral the ancestral belief systems that so many of us actually do believe that we don't see as fantasy, we just see as faith, right? We just see as part of our faith systems, right? And I've never seen, there's only a few people I've seen personally write, well, there's a few indigenous writers that are really brilliant, actually, I don't want to short them, but for me, you know, there's been Leslie Marmon Silko's Ceremony that I thought was just unreal. There's been a few that, I mean, there's, you know, Roundhouse, there's a few books, right? But this, the rendering of the indigenous character is so genius and so brilliant. And I just, in a way that I haven't seen in, for me personally, I know they exist, because you have to be careful when you talk like this. I haven't seen them personally rendered this way in children's literature. And the black an indigenous sort of connection and relationship I've never seen in children's literature, even though it's a huge thing in American history. And the twist in the book, which I can't give away because it would ruin the experience, but the twist in the book is so well written with such a deft hand that I did not, it knocked me off my, I mean, it really, it overwhelmed me in a way that I haven't felt in a very long time, because I always can see it coming because I read an awful lot of books and I didn't see it coming. A master of language, every single word is the right word. Perfect beginning, perfect ending. I really haven't read anything like it.
Oh,
just needed the whole 3 minutes.
You did need it in the end, but you just got in there. That was super slick. Fantastic. What a great pitch. Thank you, Jason. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that book. It sounds fabulous. But you could take a little breath now. Take a breather, because we're putting 3 minutes back on the clock for you, Joe. And just before we start it, tell us the book that you're putting forward, please.
I'm putting forward Stories of Your Life and Others by Ted Chiang. A fantastic collection of short stories. I absolutely love short stories because I find they're that brilliant kind of tie-in just before bed, where you just need something short to get you off into the land of dreams. But the level of thought that goes into each story in this collection is mind-blowing. You've got every story is a new delight and takes you deeper into a completely different area. So there's things on spiritualism, there's things on faith and religion, there's stories about language. What got me first onto this book was the title story, The Story of Your Life, which has been turned into the film The Arrival, about aliens coming down to the planet and scientists trying to communicate with them. I thought that was just such a brilliant concept, and then was completely awed when I discovered it, like most great films, or many great films, I should say, it's based on a short story. And this idea of language being something that can transcend the thought process and enable you to reach new heights. In this case, being able to see time as not as a linear thing, but as something all-encompassing. These aliens are able to appreciate the past and the present and everything simultaneously. And when the protagonist of The Story of Your Life starts to learn their language, she starts to experience time as this constant thing. So it's just a wonderful, beautiful titular story within the book. But all of the stories are fantastic. There's the Tower of Babylon, which is all about kind of language and bursting through out into trying to find a way into heaven and finding yourself back on Earth. There's one called Division by Zero, where a mathematician accidentally discovers that maths doesn't quite work, and this sends her crazy. Like, it sends her down this horrible route where she ends up, suicidal, because life and the universe has fallen apart because she has proven that maths doesn't actually work. There's one called 72 Letters, which is almost like an alternative history, where technology has gone down the route of creating golems to survive, creating these sort of almost like fill-in creatures, because it's discovered that humanity only has so long that we will be unable to reproduce in a few years time, and so we have to find new ways of recreating the human race. So the ideas and the kind of thought experiments that occur in these stories are just incredible, and each story is a complete and total surprise. And some of the stories totally go off form. So there's one called The Evolution of Human Science, which doesn't even feature any characters. It's like a nature journal, a science journal. I'll stop there. It's brilliant.
well done for sort of just, I knew you had loads more to say there, Joe. Well done. Oh man, what a great collection of pitches those two were. Have a break now, Joe, you can have a breather, because I want to come back and talk about Me Moth, because you did such a great job, Jason, of selling this in. I love how you said at the start, this book sells itself, don't worry about the 3 minutes, and then you were like, no, I've got so much to say, actually. But I mean, to have such praise for a debut novel, and a debut novel in verse, that's that's a big selling point anyway. It makes me think, wow, okay, Amber knows what they're doing. And then I loved this. I loved how much the characters spoke to you, and that Sunny is such a brilliant character, but also that you found their relationship and the way it's written, you know, so incredibly well done. And I think that's such an important thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's been a few debut novels and verse that have done that. You know, I think about, you know, The Poet X, right? Elizabeth Acevedo, and what she was able to do. But Amber, I think there's just something about, there's so much integrity on the line. Every word, man, every word is doing double duty. And when you find the twist, when the twist happens and it smacks you like a truck, you realize just how much every word was doing double duty. You know, like it's really masterful and sort of almost like, you know, it's like palindromic in a certain way. And really difficult to do. If nothing more, I just saw it as a feat of craft, man. Like the story itself is brilliant, but even more so, it's just a feat of craft.
Yeah, because also, when a twist is really good, you're like, well done them for getting a great twist.
Exactly.
If a twist is really good, but actually then it makes you rethink everything you've just read as well. that's another layer.
I had to go back and like read like did I miss something? Did I miss it? Yeah. Did I miss it? Right? And then I missed everything. Right? And that was sort of the genius of it. And any book that sort of has a twist like that and it makes you realize like, oh, there's always more to be done in literature. There's always more to explore. There's always, you know, and it's been done, but it was just a refresher of something that we've seen in literature, but that we don't see often enough because it's too hard to pull off.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Wow. Well, that sounds fab, as does this collection of short stories, Joe. And I'm exactly like you. I love a short story anytime, but especially before bed. I mean, what could be better than just sinking into a short little story and getting that nugget before you drift off? Yeah.
And Joe, The Arrival is my favorite alien movie of all time. It's the best alien movie of all time. And the short story. And the short story is genius.
Yeah. Yeah, it just takes me to a whole other level of kind of what would actually happen if aliens came down and just opens up that whole thing of communication. And especially when communication is kind of lacking in the world today. Yeah, so it reflects back on so many aspects of the world we're in now, which is great. Mm.
Has anyone ever talked to Ted Chiang about that story? I wonder if he's ever talked about that story, because I often wonder if the story is about immigration. Like I often wonder about this. I think about it all the time, like if it's actually a story about immigration. And about like the obvious theme about like, you know, like the human condition being bonded through communication, but also just the way that we, especially Americans, talk about the alien, right? Like we use alien as a term to describe immigrants.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, especially and the alienation of the immigrant comes through the inability to communicate. To our standard, not realizing that us being unwilling to communicate or unwilling to give grace is what's killing us all anyway. It's interesting. I think about it all the time. I wonder. I could be way off. I wonder, you know.
No, but you could
to get
totally
you
read
and
that
Ted Chiang together, Jason.
Yeah. But you could totally read that into it because there's what this story does is show the benefit as well of like learning the language of others. And it's that empathy thing, isn't it? Of kind of stepping into somebody's shoes. And, you know, there's a very obvious benefit here of like seeing time, seeing the fullness of time. But when we learn about others and speak their language, then we all benefit. But we often don't see that or refuse to see that as a society, which just limits us all.
And I love the fact that it sounds like there's such a rich tapestry of themes and ideas expressed in this collection as well, Joe, that you managed to get across.
Yeah, I mean, like the last story, Liking What You See, it's just this wonderful idea of kind of what would happen if we could turn off that our ability to appreciate beauty. Which I just think is such a, in terms of the human face, because the concept is that the society of the story have realized that it's a huge handicap to not be the most beautiful. And so there's a procedure you can have where you can turn off your ability. So you can still see faces, but you don't make the leap of thinking someone is ugly, someone is beautiful. And you know, you can appreciate, you can recognize different people and something, but it just switches off that ability and what that would do for society. And it's about that starting off, about universities making it kind of protocol that everyone has this procedure so that everyone is treated equally because of beauty standards and what have you, which is just such a different area to, you know, Story of Your Life and Aliens, or talks about, you know, faith. There's one story called Hell is the Absence of God, and it's taking this idea of what if it was just a fact that we knew, we had concrete evidence of hell and heaven and angels, and people would have visitations by angels, and you would see their souls go up to heaven or descend down into hell, and the chaos that could cause and what that means for how you live your life. It's just every story opens up this brilliant new idea, and that's what I love about the short story form. And in fact, I've been reading a lot as well, a series of short stories coming out from the British Library, which are taking short stories all based, taken from magazines of the late 1800s and early 1900s. And some of these books are centered around, you know, killer plants or creepy kids, or technology, weird technology, yeah, or trains. There was a whole collection just based around train stories. And again, come back to that idea of the short form. The short form can do that, can crystallize an idea, and can be something so bizarre, but can take you on this kind of mini adventure. But they're so often, or the best shorts are so often deep. They take you on this deep adventure, this deep dive on something that you would have never even considered.
Yeah, it's amazing, and what a great pitch for what sounds like an absolutely fabulous book. And it's, I think, from like 20 years ago or something, right? So it's,
yeah,
older,
2002, and
contemporary.
Yeah, his latest, Exhalation, which is equally brilliant. It's a fantastic collection of shorts. But yeah, Stories of Your Life is, I have a soft spot for.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to do here, because I was taken in by both of those pictures and loved the sound of both of them. And I want to read both of them. I can't say I have, and I've never read Ted Chiang, and I didn't know about Mimoth. Oh, man, this is a tough decision, isn't it? But for the twist and the payoff, I'm going to take Mimoth. Just by a whisper.
I really want to read Mimoth. It sounds fantastic.
Me too. And I just think, you know, if someone like Jason's saying what a feat and you've pulled this off, then you've got to read it, right? Yeah. And if someone like Joseph Coelho saying that this collection of stories is like amazing, then you've also got to read it. So I'll be reading both of these, and I appreciate you both bringing them to our attention and for your fabulous pitches as well. And two books that I also need to bring to everyone's attention are Our Tower by Joseph Coelho. It's out now, it's published by Francis Lincoln Books. And Oxygen Mask by Jason Reynolds, also out now, published by Faber. As is Stunt Boy, published by the amazing Knights of. And what an absolute pleasure it's been to talk about those books and many more. Jason, Joseph, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, man. Good to see you.
Great to see
you.
Good
to see you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.